Chapter 33. The great hall of the Cromeria was converted every week into a place of worship. Every student, drafter or not, was required to attend. Kip shuffled into his place in the pew between Ben-Hadad and Tia. Ben-Hadad was flicking down the coloured lenses of his odd spectacles, staring from the white marble of the arches to the many-coloured stained glass panels of the clerestory. Kip was too absorbed in what was happening on the floor to even begin to pass the scenes depicted above them in the stained glass.
"So what do we do?" he asked.
"Hmm?" Ben-Hadad asked.
"We listen,"
Tia said. Her tone was short, withdrawn, unusual for her.
"It's the second week of the cycle, so I think the Blue himself will be speaking."
"Oh, no," Ben-Hadad said. "He's the worst. I heard from one of the glims that last year Gavin Gile preached on the Blue Day and that he was amazing, but what's his name is awful."
"Clytos Blue," Kip said. He felt a weight of dread. His target.
"He tries to be scholarly because he thinks that's how blues are supposed to be, but I've heard the real scholars mocking him."
Kip didn't care, though he hoped he could dislike the man he had sworn to destroy. It would be his first chance to see Clytos Blue in person. He found that his heart was pounding. The great hall slowly filled, with a big rush of people coming in at the last minute before noon. Even as the people were still entering, a low choral chant rose from a pit hidden near the front.
"What's that?"
Kip whispered.
"The Subred's men's choir," Ben-Hadad said, still staring up at the light pouring in through the clerestory.
"Shh," Tia said, intent on the music. Cranky.
"Why don't the Blues do their own music?" Kip asked Ben-Hadad. "Don't know. It's just a special thing they do."
Ben-Hadad grinned suddenly and pulled his eyes down from the ceiling.
"Subreds are always passionate, of course, but the men are almost always sterile, both of which make them quite popular with the ladies."
"Musically talented doesn't hurt either," Tia said wistfully.
"What?"
Kip asked Ben-Hadad.
"Why?"
Ben-Hadad's eyebrows shot up.
"Why, Kip, hasn't your father explained the 70 ways of a man with a maid to you?"
Tia asked.
"That wasn't what I meant. I was..."
Oh, she knew that. She was grinning as he blushed.
70?
She relented and, speaking low, said,
"No one knows why they're sterile. It's just part of their burden and their sacrifice to Orholam."
"Shh," a girl in the row in front of them said, turning around, irritated. The choir began a new song, and this time many of the congregation joined in. Kip had no idea what they were saying. He could only guess that it was archaic Parian. It was beautiful, though, and he was glad that he didn't understand it. He could soak in pure music. Two great skylights lit up suddenly with more than the noonday sun. Kip guessed that two of the great mirrors on top of the other towers had been turned toward the great hall, which of course had an entire tower above it, so it couldn't let in light from straight above. So the mirrors stood in to let Orholam's light shine upon his people. There was more singing, and then a procession of blue-robed men and women, some swinging censers full of smoking incense. Kip watched as Clytos Blue, dressed in a blue silk robe with a high-starched collar and wearing a strange blue hat, walked within several paces of him. The man looked uncomfortable, barely enduring this. Kip didn't like him.
Orholam, 70 ways.
Kip could only really imagine 2.
Who could you ask about that sort of thing?
They'd laugh at him like he was a bumpkin. There was kneeling and prayers and readings and responses from 5,000 throats. Kip moved his mouth and pretended to know what was going on. His mother had never had time for luxiats. She'd feared Orholam's judgment, mostly saying that if you kept your head down, you might escape the wrath you deserved. Then Clytos Blue came to the lectern and began speaking so softly that even the people in the front row probably couldn't have heard a word. He was so awkwardly shy that Kip felt a stab of cruel compassion for the man. One of the luxiats approached him quietly and whispered to him. Clytos raised his voice to a mumble.
"Under eye of this 49th day?"
Kip saw the luxiat eyeing another luxiat, communicating with glances. The other luxiat got up and murmured to Clytos Blue, who spoke sharply back to the man, flushed, and then turned back to his papers.
"As I was saying,"
Clytos shrilled, finally speaking loudly enough that even those in the back could hear him. He sneered.
"It is part of the Cromeria's work to bring the most recent work of scholars to blinkered corners of our world. Not long ago, it was considered heresy to speak of our world as if it were anything but a rolled-out parchment. People believed that the world had actual corners, Luxiates most of all. Thanks to the blues and to the blue virtues, we now know this to be superstition, and not in conflict with the scriptures, which were speaking only metaphorically of the satrapies being the centre. The centre of Orhorlem's will is a metaphorical statement, not a spatial one.
Kip had no idea what he was talking about, but a couple of the Luxiats didn't look particularly pleased with this turn. Kip guessed that if Clytos lowered his voice another time, none of them was going to remind him to raise it again.
In the last few years, there has been some exciting work done by your compeers in the Tower of Reason regarding the Great Schism and the events that flowed out of the Deimachia, the War of the Gods, which most scholars now agree is better translated the War on the Gods. The Day, of course, is the ablative, and in most of our translations there's simply not enough contextual evidence to support overturning the generally accepted War of. However, in Tristem's On the Fundaments of Reason, he points out that with only a few changes in how we understand Old Parian grammar, our entire hermeneutics is shifted. These shifts are underway now.
Kip's eyes began to glaze over. There were simply too many words he didn't understand. Even if he did think grammar was interesting, he couldn't have followed if he'd wanted to. He lost the stream and began looking around the room instead. One old Luxiat in her rumpled black robe looked like she was chewing on a lemon. Several of the older students actually looked fascinated, and Kip despaired. Am I going to turn into that? He'd thought that Chromeria was a place of learning, yes, but a place of practical learning. He began studying the stained glass mosaics that lined the entire clerestory. There was Lucidonius himself, white-robed and soft-looking, surrounded by his Parian warriors, but his skin a couple of shades lighter than theirs. That was interesting. Kip had always heard he was a Parian outsider. Oh, maybe he was an outsider even to the Parians. Kip suddenly imagined furious arguments over exactly what colour Lucidonius's skin colour had been when the stained glass had gone in. He knew the Parians claimed him, especially over their rivals in riches and power, their neighbours, the pale-skinned Hrothgari. The darker Lucidonius was, the more of a poke in the eye it would be to the Hrothgari. And now, despite that the stained glass had gone in hundreds of years after Lucidonius died, people would look at the windows and assume that because they were old, they must be accurate. Fascinating. Kip wished he knew. Oh, hell, that's exactly what old Windy up there is doing, isn't it? Turning the world on the passing of a word, like Kip was imagining the world turned on a bit of pigment in a window. The blue had lowered his voice again, and Kip had to lean forward to hear him now. But he'd said a word that had caught Kip's attention. Lightbringer.
Which is why the Lightbringer is best understood as a metaphor for each one of us. Each of us is to bring light into the dark corners of the world. Not through missionary zeal. If the religions of those beyond the ever-dark gates are serving the barbarians out there well, who are we to change who they are? Are they not also the children of Orhorlem? We are to bring light into the dark corners of our own lives by being kind and generous, by speaking well of others, by loving extravagantly. The Lightbringer is not coming. Hear, O children of Am, the Lightbringer is not one. We are Lightbringers all.
The Luxiat's eyes all seemed ready to pop out of their heads as they ran screaming from the room to bathe themselves in milk. Kip almost burst out laughing at the image. Holy shit, Kip. Got to get more sleep. The High Luxiat took the dais. He didn't even look at Clytos Blue.
Choir, he said, I wonder if you could close us with Father of Lights, forgive us.
It wasn't, apparently, the song that had been planned. Oh, nice. But the men sang it, and they sang beautifully. Everyone shuffled out after the song, and Kip asked Ben-Hadad,
So what was all that?
A lie from the pit of hell, Ben-Hadad said.
Two girls in the row in front of them turned and glanced at him, but he was heedless.
There have always been fights about the Lightbringer, who he is, or will be, or if he already came. The Cromeria says he already came, that Lucidonius was the Lightbringer. His name means Light-Giver, after all.
But you don't buy that? Kip asked.
I don't know all the arguments, but my parents don't believe it.
Kip looked at him. It was one of the dumber things he'd ever heard, and by the sudden glum look on Ben-Hadad's face, he could tell the boy knew it, too.
I don't want to live after history is settled, Ben-Hadad said.
Which was also dumb. I don't like how the world is, so it isn't that way. At least this time Kip was able to keep himself from saying it.
The Lightbringer is going to be a genius of magic,
Tia suddenly said. She'd been unusually quiet until now.
A warrior who sweeps all before him. He will be great from his youth. He's going to do things no one ever thought was possible, and bring us back to the true path. Lucidonius wasn't even a good drafter. He figured out how to make coloured lenses, but that hardly makes him a genius, does it? The Lightbringer will protect us. He will slay gods and kings.
I killed a king. A chill washed down Kip's back.
There are no kings anymore, an older boy said, butting in. Lucidonius killed the last of them, and the last gods.
Lucidonius's people did that,
Ben-Hadad said, not Lucidonius himself.
It's the same thing, the boy said. When you say the Colour Prince seized Garriston, you don't mean he picked it up. You don't even mean that he took it by himself. You mean it was done at his will. It's children,
a black-robed Luxiot said, disgusted. Kip wondered how long the man had been listening.
Wielding half-remembered foolishness from your parents and superstitions from the benighted. Get to your lectures. I'll not have your blasphemies in this holy place. Now, out!